So now we go over to page 109, glyphosate use in the city of Marion. Now, who would like to move? Councillor Schilling.
Thank you, Your Worship. Happy to move as written. I've read the report quite thoroughly, and it makes sense to me. There's nothing that clearly pops out to me going that this is bad. Well, I understand that it is bad, but I also understand where council's coming from. And I think the table on page 111 clearly shows that we are slowly reducing the amount that we use every year, especially compared to 2017. We're less than half than what we're using in 2017. But I think the council and admin have it in their minds that we slowly want to reduce our dependency on this. But for now, we still need to use it. And I think we have the appropriate things in place.
All right. Is that seconded? Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, I agree with pretty much all of what Councillor Schilling's just said. And I note there's another passage about halfway down page 111 about the Australian Pesticides and Veterinary Medicines Authority, who are our statutory agency responsible for the management and regulation of all agricultural and veterinary chemical products in Australia. And they have determined that it's safe to use. So I think we run a dangerous course if we start going against some of these statutory bodies and their recommendations. So I agree that we should keep using it.
All right. Anyone speaking against? Councillor Hull. You need to unmute, Councillor.
Understand. Thank you. I am against this, and I was hoping that somebody might have seen the wisdom in the phase-out option on page 116, which would have actually taken us in the right direction with this. As for Councillor Schilling's observation of how much was used in 2017, a wet year, that's in the report, a lot of growth. Guess what, Councillor Schilling and everybody else? We had our wettest April on record for, 30 years, and May's pretty wet too. So we're going to have a lot of growth, and you can bet your life that the use of weed killer will be high again this year. Mr. Mayor, I've mentioned this before, but nobody seems to take into account the indiscriminate spraying by our council of this poison. A fellow, a contractor leaning out of a ute, out of the left-hand window of the ute.
There is a point of order. Just excuse me, Councillor Hull, while I deal with the point of order. Councillor Blescu, what is it?
I don't think it's correct to say that there's indiscriminate use.
Well, I leave that as a point of debate. I don't think you can jump in and call that a point of order, but you may get your chance to speak on the other side in the debate. Councillor Hull, you may continue.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So we've got contractors leaning out the left-hand window of a ute, spraying this stuff as they're trying to drive. Now, that's got to be an issue in itself. You can't use a mobile phone and drive, but you can lean out the window with a spray and spray weeds across the footpath. There's no management of how that might be picked up by the wind and affect hedges and people's plants in their street, in their front yard. But I want to make the point also that Morrison Blackburn, a well-known law firm, have got a class action going at the moment and encouraging people that may have been affected by Roundup with Hodgkin's lymphoma to actually be listed with them. Now, that can't be happening for nothing. There's got to be something in that when they've been allowed to actually take that court action. They had to get permission. There must be some substance in it for them to progress that. And this is on social media right now, on Facebook and on Twitter, throughout our community. And there's growing concern about this. Sonia Feldoff and David Bevan ran this on the ABC recently. And look, You know, it's in the report there's community concern. Why aren't we reacting to that, Mr. Mayor, and looking at the phase-out option instead of just sticking to our guns and continuing to spray this poison throughout our streets, particularly out the left-hand window of a ute, for God's sake?
Now, I wouldn't like people to think that just because a court action's commenced that it has substance. There are certainly insubstantial court actions started all the time. But I want to ask staff about the practices which Councillor Hull alleges are unsafe. There is mention of the work health and safety policies in the report. What do management say about what's been alleged? Mr. Lyon?
I'm going to start and then I'm going to ask Mr. Conlon to just talk about some of the day-to-day practices in a minute. I think the members know that I'm a believer in giving frank and honest advice, and I've looked at this matter in quite a bit of detail, particularly over the last few months. The report does show that we are reducing our usage. It's not going to go to zero by the current reduction, but we are reducing it. I think importantly for Councillor Hull's concerns, we're doing our best to manage the risk by using trained staff. They're all using, every single one of them, PPE. They are all using this substance in complete accordance with the manufacturer's instructions. In fact, this product is freely available for a child to buy online if they want to do from any Coles store. And so I'm very, very happy for my trained operators to use it. I probably suspect, as many of you might as well, that back in the 50s and maybe the 60s, and I don't know, maybe the 70s, people weren't as careful. And I suggest we all know that PPE and practices and shortcuts, or at least the PPE has improved a lot, and we don't take the shortcuts anymore, and we're smarter than we were, and it's 2020. And I don't stand for anything in my workforce that would even come close to allowing our workers to use any product unsafely at all. I'm hearing that the relevant bodies are saying it's safe, and the alternatives are just prohibitive, both financially and the efficiency that they required. You know, we have had a massive rain in April. The option to spending a small amount on this safe product is to get an army of people out to start weeding, and that's a massive job. Mr. Conlon, you're much closer to me than our people in the field. Could you comment, please, on the ute practices and the day-to-day practices of our operators, please? Thank you.
Yes. Now, just before you do, PPE, personal protective equipment, is it?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. For those that don't like acronyms. And Mr. Conlon, look, Councillor Hull's allegations are serious, and so that's why I've asked management to address them in some way. Mr. Conlon?
Yes, through the chair. Regards to the ute and the left-hand drive spraying, the contractor would only spray when it's the perfect conditions to do so. And the volume in which they spray, it's not like what would come out of a hose. It's enough of the droplets to hit the foliage, just enough to kill the plant without saturating the ground. So I often speak to the contractor, talking about the contract itself, and ask them if they're out and about, and they'll say, no, sorry, the wind's picked up. We've ceased operations for the day. So we often touch base with the contractor to make sure that they're not spraying in windy conditions, and confidently, I can confidently say that they don't spray in windy conditions. But yeah, so in regards to the legalities of people operating off that side of the vehicle, I'm not able to speak about that because I'm not 100% sure about that.
All right. Now we've had a mover, a seconder, a speaker against. Councillor Nosica, you've got your hand up either to speak in favour or if you have a question.
Yes, Your Worship. I wanted to ask Mr. Lyons one question, which probably helped me to check point number four on the motion to if it can be modified. I was asking Lyons that, there's 30% concentrated vinegar can also do the same work like the glycerides, which it has been recommended. Is there any room for the council to try as experimental of 30% concentrate of vinegar, which can be diluted at 15%, and it can do exactly work like the other one which we are going to use, we are recommending. And if there's a room to do that, is there any way we can put point number 4 to have a clinical trial between using of the 30% concentrated vinegar, and then later on down the track, we can make up a decision between the two, which one we can prefer to continue using.
Right, Mr. Lyons, the vinegar solution.
Councillor, that's an interesting one. I haven't heard of any field trials by farmers or other councils in vinegar as a weed suppressant. I'm willing to trial it, but I haven't heard of it. And what I'm going to do is ask Mr. Conlon just to comment on any knowledge that he might have.
Through the chair, there are other products that are used, such as pinol, pelargonic acid, and I've heard vinegar being used, but I don't think trials indicate that they're that effective as glyphosate. And I've also heard that it's not very good for the person, the operator spraying it on the ground. So, and I don't know if there's been a huge amount of studies put in if that has an even worse effect than glyphosate. That would have to be followed up.
Mr. Councillor Masika, as a way forward, perhaps that proposal, if you want to go ahead with it, would best be first undertaken as a conversation with management, and if you and taking any other advice you wish, and if you see fit, then bringing a separate motion to council, because it's not necessarily contradictory to the motion that is up for consideration at the moment. There could be trials of any number of things in addition to the usage that staff suggest. So, Councillor Masika, did you wish to speak to the motion or any other question?
No, I speak that I speak for the motion that to agree with the recommendation, and meanwhile I take your advice to talk to management to see if we can try another product like 30% concentrated vinegar for the future use within the council.
All right, thank you. Now we've had a speaker 4. Is there another speaker against the motion? Councillor Gard.
Not against the motion, Your Worship, at this point. I did have some
questions. Well, that's what the rules suggest, unless you have a question.
I do have questions, probably it's partly a comment, but the first question is, I note that there's a couple of knockdowns, as they call it, when you do a circuit and spray with glyphosate. Other products can involve twice as many trips and therefore a lot more expense. Then there's pre-emergence, and they require just one spray, and they do a great preventative job in certain circumstances. I'm not aware of the economics, but my question is, have we looked into that, including the actual operational cost? The second question is there a point in winding back applications near areas such as schools? And really, I guess I'd like to hear the answers to those two questions before I make further comment.
So questions, Mr. Lyons or Mr. Conlon?
Yeah, we'll go straight to Mr. Conlon, please. Thank you.
Mr. Conlon.
Through the chair. Yes, we do actually use a residual herbicide to prevent weeds from germinating, and that's proven to be quite effective. But we do still have some weeds that germinate, and that's when we perform a spot spray with glyphosate. And that's the most cost-effective way for us to manage this weed control contract. In regards to spraying in playgrounds or near playgrounds, I believe we do that before 8:30 in the morning. If there's people within the vicinity, we don't spray at all. But if with regards to around schools, I'm not 100% sure on that, so I'd have to look into that and bring back that information to you.
Right, Councillor Gard.
Yes, if I may just respond with my third point, and that is that we did discuss this on the last round on this subject, and that is the what we're looking for when we're treating weeds, and it disappoints me that in some areas where there's not good finishing off as far as footpaths and curbing, etc., is concerned, that we don't actually get rid of the dead weeds. We can have anything up to 4 feet tall dead weeds. Now, they're probably at least as ugly as the original weed. And then there's the seed factor. Coming back to the pre-emergent, there is another aspect to pre-emergent aside from the economic side, and that is the fact that the weed doesn't come up at all and you don't get seeding and you start to make real progress with the overall amount of such treatment that you need to do. So is it possible that we could look into not just whether we use pre-emergent in some areas where it may be more efficient and economic, but also what sort of policy can we draw up on the finished product that we're trying to achieve? Because, you know, as far as civic pride is concerned, in many of the weed treatments, there is none, and it's very disappointing.
Mr. Conlon?
You raise a very good point. Through the chair. You raise a very good point, Councillor Gard. In the contract, we state that all weeds should be no higher than 100 millimetres tall. And I will admit that that's not always the case, and I've had to follow that up recently with some areas. Made sure the contractor knows that nothing can be any higher than 100 millimetres. But of course, there will be some times that we just can't see everything and get to everything. But our residents soon let us know when the weeds do get beyond that height, and we get out there as soon as we can and fix the problem. Going back to your question or statement about weed seed, that is a huge issue, and that's why we have a lot of weed issues in general. Weeds generally are prolific seeding plants and aggressively growing and grow rapidly. So it's all about timing, and we could just continuously spray throughout our verges, but that's not what we want to do. We want to get the balance right between how many times we spray to reduce the amount of herbicide going on the ground. So sometimes weeds will get to seed, but we're trying to minimise that as much as possible.
Thank you. Now, three questions is the limit, but did you have anything more to say, Councillor Gard?
Well, just really to encapsulate that, is it possible to change the motion or add one point to the motion, and that is that Council will continue to look at efficiencies and better method in relation to all of the above?
Well, Councillor, I'm not sure that amendment would add a lot, but you could move the amendment. I mean, I'd ask management to comment first if you're going to move it, but I mean, it's something that you can take up sort of offline with management in the normal way we do whenever we see a problem with weeds, and a discussion can be had about greater efficiency then. I think rather than a, you know, dare I say, motherhood statement, let's be more efficient, with which we would all agree, it might be better just having a more specific discussion offline. Up to you.
I'd be happy with that if that's acceptable. Might be called second guessing, but I'd be happy if we had that understanding.
Yeah, look, I think Mr. Lyons would be happy to look at any suggestions you had to make the whole process more efficient.
Great.
Any other speakers in favour of the motion? No, I'll look to the mover. Might have to remind me who it was.
That would be me.
Councillor Shillings, to close the debate.
I do understand where Councillor Hull is coming from, but I also see in the report that there is no major flags for me to go, no, we don't need to stop this at point. I'm also just looking at the report, just concerned about the fact that currently we have, I think it's $215,000 current budget, and it could be up to $5 million a year if we phased into steaming or something like that. I think there's a discussion that we could have on potential futures and where we're going, but now I think we need to stay with what we've got, because I don't know where we're going to find that extra $4.5 million.
I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. Carried by majority. So we'll move on.
A division, please, Mr. Mayor.
Councillor Hull, was that a call for a division?
Yes, please.
Yep. All right. If we could use the... let's use the electronic voting. If everyone can... go to the top right corner of their little box. No, that's not where it is. Just remind us, Mr. Waits or Ms. McKenzie, how do we do our little hands up electronically? I can't see it now. Oh, participants.
Participants.
Yeah. Or do I not get one? Okay. Oh, yes, there they are. The hands are going up. These are the votes in favour. But I can't see them, so that's a problem.
Maybe
I have to look at the participants list, do I? And then panelists, right. Thank you, councillors. I'm onto it now. So those in favour are councillors Hutchinson, Crossland, Schilling, Duncan, Telfer, Velescu, Pryor and Masika. Put your hands down, and then we'll ask for the others to go up. Right, those against, please raise your electronic hand. They are councillors Gard, Mason, Hull and Clancy. So I ask Ms. McKenzie, you had the same result? So it's 8-4,
yes,
and yep. The motion is passed. So we'll go on to next item, page 117, I think we are, yes. Delane Avenue, Edwardstown driveway link. Mr. Lyons, via email, advised there'd been some sort of position reached which seemed satisfactory to a number in the community. So is there an appropriate motion? Somebody wants to move? Councillor Masika.
Thanks, Your Worship. I'd like to move the motion the way it is written, and it took us long with a very long discussion, and it's very sad this issue has been back and forth and it caused some divisions to the residents who live on Delane Avenue. And finally, today we reach up to the compromise. I spoke to the residents.
Councillor Masika, yeah. So I am so sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to make sure we're all looking at the right motion. Are you moving the motion that is printed in the agenda for the meeting, or something in an email that was sent around today, or something else? I'm not sure.
I'm just really moving up the motion which was sent by email this afternoon.
Oh, right. And Mr. Waits is helping us somebody is posting up that motion. So, yes, Councillor Masika, please speak to it and just explain to us what's happened here.
Yeah, in fact, I said, look, Your Worship, I'm very happy to see that we've come up with the win-win resolution for the Delane Avenue. It has been an issue which has divided up the residents, and It has been back and forth since November last year, but I'm glad we councillors, myself and Sasha, were discussing, and then we're discussion with the administration, we've discussion with the residents, and then we have come up with the resolution, which is being printed on the screen. And we are saying, look, accepting that the request the CEO to present a report on the 9th of June to rescind up the original motion, which was passed last year, and also to be replaced by number three, point number three, which is on the screen, and which is also accompanied with the budget at point number three on the third point.
Very well. And is that seconded? Councillor Mason, did you wish to speak to it? Councillor Mason, just need to unmute.
Yeah, sorry,
thank you.
Yes, I'd like to second this motion. I think it's a very good resolution considering how divided the street is. I didn't want to remove the chicane as I believe it was going to impact the rest of the community with the speeding cars and the extra cars coming through. I think this resolution can help with appeasing the people who are affected by the noise. And yeah.
Very good. Well, very pleasing to see that some resolution as proposed has come out of the mixed feelings of the community, the common sense of the councillors and the technical knowledge of the staff. Before we go any further, are there any questions about the motion? Councillor Bilescu, then Councillor Crossland.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. I just wanted to clarify, did the local residents in close proximity to the chicane know that the proposed compromise is bitumen that has been raised and they're aware of that? Can the staff member guarantee that that's what they're aware of, as opposed to bitumen at the same level as the current bitumen? I ask that because the problem was the noise of this, the bump.
Through the chair, I had telephone discussions this afternoon with both ward councillors and worked this solution through with them. And I explained carefully to them that that was the solution, that there would be a raised surface and that the existing pavers would now be bitumen under this new arrangement. Now, I haven't had contact with any of the residents. That's the ward councillors that have done that. My understanding is that that's what the residents are expecting, but I'd need the ward members to confirm that, please.
I think in answer, it's a little out of line, but in answer to the question, would either of the ward councillors like to comment on the expectations of those very close to the chicane?
Yes, Your Worship, I'd like to make a comment on that one there, because the issue of removing up the pavers and also being replaced with the bitumen, it came from the residents who are living directly on the chicane. So it's not from we councillors. So they know what they've proposed and what they're going to get. So we had a very long conversation of more than 3 hours with the first petitioner, Dunlop, Mr. and Mrs. Dunlop, and they're quite happy with the resolution which has been proposed on the screen.
All right. Councillor Vlisk, another question, is it?
Yeah. Are they aware of raised bitumen? Because I had some discussions with them initially in Councillor Masika's absence, and the issue was the raised. As long as they're aware of it.
Councillor Masika's really just answered that question. Now, I suppose you have some options if you want to consult further, etc. I'll come, you have a think about that while we'll go to Councillor Crossland with a question. Or
I had two questions, Your Worship. The first one is pretty much the same as Councillor Velescu's, is I thought there was one plan historically where the bitumen could have been reduced to be the same level as the road, but keep the chicane. And the question to Mr. Lyons is that still a possibility? Would that still be within the regulations?
Mr. Lyons?
It's a good question, which I've explored with our engineering team. There's two types of traffic management devices that look quite similar. So the one that we have there is a driveway link. It's got some triangular bits on the sides. It's got one way for traffic going through it. But importantly, driveway links are raised. The other solution that is available is an angled slow point, which looks very similar, except it's all at grade, so there is no raised section. And I'm sure we've driven through them. You can just go through and it's normally bitumised all the way through, or you could have some paving at grade through there. Now, there's a technical difference with the use of these two solutions under the code. The driveway link, which we have, is more a one-off traffic management device at a certain location, and that's the way it's being used in Delaney. The slow points are normally used, the intention of them is to be used in a series. So they're not raised, they're just at grade, and you would have two, maybe three, maybe four down a street to control traffic management in that way. So Delaney is clearly intended to be a raised driveway link, and that's why, to retain its integrity and compliance with the code, we would retain the raising but put bitumen down instead.
Councillor Crossland, anything further?
Yeah, still two more. So that just raises the question. The road itself is quite, it's not a very long road, and it's already got other traffic calming devices, as well as a railway line, which pretty much slows traffic down when those barriers are down. wouldn't we be able to call this one of a series of devices in that short road?
The series of devices are normally meant to be slow point after slow point after slow point. So the arrangement of the slow point is repeated over and over down a road. That isn't the case here. Further, the configuration of the two devices, as in the length and the configuration of them, is quite different. So we would in effect be removing the driveway link and putting in a slow angle point, which looks, feels and is sized quite a bit differently, although it is at grade.
Councillor Crossland.
My last question. In previous discussions, the upgrade of the driveway link to make it compliant was going to be maintenance. I noticed we've slipped in a $25,000 cost now. Is there a reason why it's no longer classed as maintenance, or why it needs that extra money?
Yeah, thank you for that. Look, I wanted to do it with maintenance, but I couldn't do it with the bitumen. And the trouble with the bitumen is that it has to be coloured. It's not going to be a leery pink or anything, but it's got to be a contrasting colour. And the problem with contrasting colour bitumens is they're small batches. No one does them normally. So you've got to go in, do a batch, wash it out and get the other batch running. So it's an expensive little exercise. And so I had to put it through as a budget.
Yep. Edwardstown Footy Club colours are double blue, by the way. Anyway, are there any other questions or anyone speaking against the motion? Councillor Valescu?
Yeah, look, I'd like to speak against it. My issues with raising it, I think the problems that were outlined to me were with it being raised, and I have concerns that the residents may not be clear as to what having bitumen there instead of the paving is. So, I can't support it in this stage.
All right. Any other speakers in favour of the motion? If not, then I'll see if Councillor Masika would like to close the debate, respond to any points.
Yeah, thanks, Your Worship. I would like to ask my fellow councillors to put this issue to rest. It has taken too long. It caused a lot of emotions and also divisions within the on the avenue. And I know what Councillor Valescu is talking about. And we had a very long discussion with the first petitioner. And the first petitioner is the one who came with the proposal of removing the pavers, and also the other things which needs to be done on the chicken, which I explained to them before. So they are quite happy to see that the paper has been removed, and probably that it will reduce the amount of noises which they go through during the day, during the night. So I'll ask my fellow councillors to vote for this motion, and we see how things unfold. But I believe me and the Councillor Masson, we believe that it's a win-win situation, and we another way out, and the residents will be happy. So the shed will be there, and probably the noises will go down. So let's see what will happen, but we are quite happy to see the motion being passed tonight.
All right, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. Carried by a majority. Thank you.
Can I call a division on that one, please, Your Worship?
Yep. Councillor Crossan calls a division. So let's try the little hands again. I hope I'm better at it this time. At least I know where to find them. Right, so people have been very quick. That's very good. Those in favour, Councillors Schilling, Hutchinson, Telfer, Pryor, Mason, Duncan, Clancy, Masika and Gard. So if you could put your hands down, I'll ask other councillors against to vote if you are against the motion. So they would be councillors Crossland, Velescu and Hull. Now, Councillor Clancy, did I have you, can I just check whether you're for or against? You were four, that, and I did call you as four. Yeah. So yeah. I've got nine, and I've, now did I count Councillor Velescu in favour previously? No, so I've got nine in favour, three against. Ms. McKenzie, yes. You agree?
Yes, those that's correct.
Being Councillors Crossland, Velescu and Hull against. All right. So I declare the motion carried by majority. All right, now, corporate reports, rather than move all of them on block, on page...
Sorry, Mayor Hannah, we've still got the CSI report.
Ah, what a shame. And I thought we were going well for time. Beg your pardon, that's on page 250. Now, this certainly will need a bit of discussion. Even I've got a question, but start off with Councillor Crossland. Three questions, away you go. Just need to unmute, thank you.
Sorry, Worship, I'd like to move a motion that I've put to staff. I've sent it through, but also suggest that we suspend standing orders for this one, please.
Right, well, I suppose, well, first of all, do you want to suspend or move the motion first?
I'll move the motion first.
All right, then let's see the motion. Ms. Thwaites, do you have it or somebody? Thank you. And I think then before we have the suspension of standing orders, it might help, Councillor, because a lot of us wouldn't have seen this. So it would help if you explained your motion. I think you'll have to take your speaking opportunity now.
Yeah.
After we've had a general discussion, I may come back to you for clarification if need be. So please speak to the motion.
Thank you, Your Worship. The main issues are probably point two, first of all, where there was an option to either maintain the current out-of-hours service offered by the contractor or whether to add car parking in. Just speaking to that briefly, there are not very many car parking issues for after-hours contractors. The main ones that we do get are ones which an out-of-hours contractor with an expiration book either would get there too late to actually put an expiration notice on, because a lot of them are moved prior to arrival, but ultimately wouldn't actually resolve the problem. And the proper agency for blocked driveways and obstructions is SAPOL, So I wouldn't want to mislead the community members thinking that we were going to be able to deal with it when we can't. So there's no real reason to change that. Point three is again an option with a number of options. Keep the status quo or reinstate point five. Look, I've realised that a lot of the extra call outs and extra responsibilities for staff are for local nuisance. There is a direct cost shifting from the state government when they handed over responsibility for a lot of those calls to councils. And that has had an impact on our service delivery. So even though the service delivery has improved, I think it could be improved even more if we have staff to deal with that extra responsibility. Point four is really just to look at the option of, we've got an extra 0.5 staff as well as dealing with some of those extra calls. I'd actually like to ensure that we are being proactive to some of those issues that the community raise with us on an ongoing basis, and that maybe every quarter we have some proactivity around a certain issue. That's self-explanatory in point four. And again, in point five is an extra point. I still think we've got a little bit of work to do. I'm not ready to say that we need an extra car, an extra person. I think that's a step too far. I think some of the additional workload on staff has been created by the bylaw writing and the to-ing and fro-ing and council reports. And I think once they're now complete, and I think if we give it 18 months, we can have another look at what the changes the 0.5 has resulted in, and also have a look to see if we can actually get even better service with an extra person or not.
Right. Now, that point, you're moving to suspend standing orders, are you?
I still think people might... I've spent a lot of time on this, phone calls, emails, but I think other people may want the chance to ask some of the questions I asked that aren't obvious in the report.
Yes. All right. Now, let's sort of go around the horseshoe then. You're moving that way. Is the suspension seconded? Just call out if you... Yes, Councillor Pryor. I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, yep, that's carried. So we're in free-flowing mode at the moment. So I'll go around the room, or go around the board, I should say. That's what it looks like from here. And people can ask their questions, but also make their comments, put their point of view. But really, we should be using this time to distill the issues. So if you could, normally the point where standing orders are suspended helps the framing of a motion, but we actually have a motion before us. So we'll see how we go. Maybe the good thing about this is that we're not limited to the to and fro of debate, so everybody gets a say. So perhaps I could ask everyone to quickly ask any factual questions they have. That's the first thing. Secondly, to comment on the staffing level issue, which includes the motor vehicle or not. And also comment on the after hours contractor issue for parking. So, they seem to be two of the most live issues. All right, first person I see is Councillor Valescu. So would you like to ask any questions and then express your views briefly on those two topics?
My question is, if we dedicated the extra resource, as in page 251, towards the parking disputes, How long would the waiting period drop to? That's my first question.
Who can answer that? Ms. Perrin or someone else?
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy to take that in the first instance.
Mr. Delacombs, thank you.
Thank you. So through the Chair, Councillor Valescu, this resource in practice would become another member of the team, alleviating some of those issues we've talked about in an administrative burden. It would be hard to give you a concrete timeframe that some of those appeals would be reduced to. However, I'd be happy to update Council on the status of that. Needless to say, it would be improved, and I'd be happy to report back to Council on that at a time of Council's choosing.
Councillor Valescu.
Thank you. My other question was, what are the other activities that could be expanded in the out-of-hours service that would be of benefit?
Thank you, through the Chair. Look, there's if we go back to the data that we saw presented at the forum and backed up somewhat in this report, there aren't that many out-of-hours calls anyway. And so I think parking issues that we did get in terms of complaints and other issues were probably more so the calls we got, but as Councillor Crossland pointed out, our ability to resolve those to their full extent is somewhat limited. And so I guess there's no real other benefit of expanding their powers further at this time that I can see.
Yeah, Councillor Valescu, anything else?
Yeah, thank you. I think we should have an increased presence and visibility out of hours, just so people in the community know that we are there outside of business hours, and the people that perhaps are thinking of doing the wrong thing or that do the wrong thing are aware through the appropriate education and expiation that the inspectors are out there. So I'd like us to have extra resources available out of hours, and also a staff member in-house to be able to clear up some of those backlogs, because I think 6 months is a long time for a matter to be resolved as far as the customer experience goes.
Right, Councillor Hull, any factual questions and then your views on staffing and after-hours parking?
Well, Mr. Mayor, I was going to call a point of order on Councillor Valescu because I didn't like agreeing with him.
Any factual questions?
I do agree. Look, I do have one, and it gets back to when we changed our after-hours service. And it was probably the last council term, if I'm correct. And some of the new members might not realise the circumstances as to how that happened. We heard reports how staff were sitting in the office, right? Just a minute.
Shall I come back to you, Councillor?
Yeah, no, you're right. We had reports of staff sitting in the office because they didn't have anything to do. Like, that strikes me as a supervision issue, because with all the issues in our city, you know, dog attacks and car parking and illegal dumping and a whole range of other bylaws that they should look at, I'm just flabbergasted that we can have a situation where staff were sitting in the office twiddling their thumbs because they had nothing to do. I simply don't get that, Mr. Mayor. And I still haven't got an explanation from the administration why there wasn't adequate supervision, because clearly they were not told to get off their bums and get out and patrol and to actually live up to the expectations.
Do you want to put that question to management, or is that just historical?
To Mr. Skull, yeah, absolutely.
All right, Mr. Skull, what do you say to that? Where is he?
Thank you, Chair. I recall that time there were some accusations that staff were certainly not as busy as they might have been on a weekend because of lack of supervision. That was a few years ago. I know that Ms. Perrin and Mr. Manuel and Mr. Delacombs have sorted that out, so it's not occurring at the moment. But there were some accusations of that occurring. It's not occurring anymore, Councillor Hull.
All right, Councillor Hull.
Follow-up question to Mr. Scull. If that's been resolved and we would have staff out there doing their job, would it go a long way to recover the cost of actually employing them and buying vehicles and the like? And not only that, you know, in terms of community education, I don't want to be seen as being punitive all the time, but, you know, if there are offences being happening out there, there should be a penalty, but also to actually educate our community in the contact the officers have with our community.
Who's going to answer that?
I'll answer that, Chair, if I can. Certainly the education of our community is an important part of the role of the inspectors. We're not putting quotas on staff to go out and get as many fines as they can to increase the increase revenue. The return on investment of education, of course, is a long-term investment in better community behaviour. But if the suggestion is that employing more staff to get more fines is the requirement, then we've got a view that we try to educate as first and expiate as a last port of call, unless the infringement is severe.
All right. I don't think that's exactly what the policy says, but fair enough. Mr. Hull, Councillor Hull, you got any more?
No, look, that pretty much sums it up because, you know, I tend to agree with Councillor Valescu that we should have more of this, not less. And what worries me is that people are actually at home after hours. You know, during working hours, they're at work, they're at the office. Things are a bit different at the moment. But on weekends, that's when the parking issues happen around sporting fields. And you know, if we've got our officer tied up with a dog attack, and I often wonder what happens if there's a dog attack when we don't have an inspector to go and have a look at it. You know, like, are we living up to community expectations in terms of timely investigation? A dog attack has to be investigated spot on the time, not on the weekday after. It should be investigated on that day, and community expects that.
Yeah, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, management, but I think dog attacks or dog fights have a high priority responses. Yeah. All right, let's go to Councillor Clancy. So any factual questions and any comment on the question of additional staffing and whether parking after hours should be more enforced? I just need to unmute. Thank you.
I was just wondering if we could consider, rather than using the private contractor, can we just have staff on an on-call basis? And if they're called, there's a fee, and if not?
That's a good question. There might be a three-hour minimum call-out, but what do the finances look like if we were to do that, bearing in mind the EBA? Who could answer that? Mr. Scott? Or Mr. Dillcombs, thank you.
Thank you, through the Chair. We haven't explored that that particular option, Councillor, in a financial sense, but I guess as in the report, what we tried to highlight was that the roster system as it currently is with staff working the hours that they are really is covering the bulk of our inquiries and the bulk of our community issues, and that's really the bulk of the times that we're going to investigate and follow up some of those complaints. So we may get complaints overnight, and the more serious ones like dog attacks would be investigated immediately, and that's covered by our by after hours contractor and can be also attended by SAPOL, and then our staff would come and investigate at times suitable during then. So in answer to your question, there probably is a calculation that could be done that could look at a call out option. However, our preference is to remain with the roster system that we have at the moment, with the after hours service covering those issues that do occur outside of our staffed hours, with follow-ups that happen the day after.
Right, Councillor Clancy. All right. Councillor Telfer.
I'm actually had decided on the half-time for FTE. I very much want coverage. I was with family at Mitchell Park Oval, an unwell man living out of a shopping trolley. I was quite vexed what to do and rang staff. So I believe that and the impending education that's needing to be done with the CATS legislation, that we need that 0.5.
Thank you. Councillor Duncan.
I actually like what Ian has presented. I thought that was quite a good idea. The main complaints that I had about parking is that is over the fines being given when they actually are doing something illegal, but they don't want the safety officers being around as frequent, if you don't mind. So I think that what we've got at the moment would be okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, I had quite a lengthy discussion with Councillor Crossland about this the other night, and we kind of got to a point where I'm relatively happy as well. I have a sort of a vaguely related question about how we walk the line of incidents where SAPOL's required. That it's probably not so relevant here, but that's probably one for in the future. So someone like a blocked driveway where we can't really do anything about it, it needs a SAPOL attendance for that. But yeah, other than that, I'm relatively happy.
Thank you. I see Councillor Crossland next, but I'll skip Councillor Crossland because he's had a go. Councillor Mason.
Yeah, I think increasing the 0.5 for just the fact that there'll be someone available when if someone needs them, I think that's probably the best option.
All right, thank you. And Councillor Gard?
Yes, I pretty well concur with Councillor Crossland. I think in reading the report, I kind of fell at the last jump when I got to the end of the conclusion, which read, should Council wish to radically improve CSI service standards, etc., then we would increase the... we'd have an additional FTE and community safety vehicle. And the word radical tripped me up quite a bit. I thought, well, are we that far short that we need to conceive something like that? So I'm wondering if that could be explained. Otherwise, I'm pretty well in concurrence with how Councillor Crossland is putting his motion.
Thank you. Yes, I mean, looking at the table, giving some cross-council comparisons, it didn't seem that we were radically short of acceptable standards. But that's just a comment in answer to your comment about radical changes, Councillor Gard. So you happy to leave it there, Councillor?
Well, yes, unless I've missed something, I'm just not quite sure what prompted the author to use the word radical.
All right. Well, let's see. Do we have a comment from staff, Mr. De La Coombs?
Thank you, Chair. And apologies as the author of that particular choice of words in the report. In conveying the message, I was hoping to really, really see what we have now as being meeting the service standards that we set, which I think is quite good and remarkable for this past 12-month period, that could be further enhanced with an additional 0.5 FTE. And really, it was just a choice of words to articulate a greater level of enhancement, perhaps would have been a more moderate choice of term in that instance.
Okay, thanks for that.
Yep.
Councillor Schlemmer. I've got no further questions to ask. Councillor Clancy asked the question.
Well, thank you, Councillor Hutchins. Thank you, Councillor Hutchinson. Any questions? No. Councillor Matiga, any questions or comments? No. Just from the Mayor then, I must say I was disappointed in the report that there wasn't a greater quantification of the work required as a result of the litter and nuisance jurisdiction coming over to council and state government. So this is a case where I felt there was a gap in the draft report. I emailed staff to express a concern about that and actually spoke to a manager about that. And yet I still feel we've got the raw numbers in the report before us, all right? 300 and something call-outs. Now, I don't know whether that's a lot or a little because it depends. Is it an average half hour per call-out? Is it an average day per call-out? And if we don't have those figures anywhere in the organisation, then I am worried about how it's being managed. But on the basis that there must be some increase in workload as a result of that transfer of jurisdiction, I think Councillor Crossland's probably got it about right in thinking about an extra half time. And in terms of the parking, I don't know which way Council wants to go. Obviously, it's very frustrating for residents to have after-hours parking problems across the driveway or whatever. If we're not going to increase after-hours service of those problems, as Councillor Crossland suggests, then I think we need a communication campaign. Hopefully, Mr. Clark's in attendance there somewhere, to make it very clear to people. And instead of putting out, hey, we're still here for you, kind of merry postcards to the whole community, something more effective would be something like, who you're going to call, you know, to use a line from a popular film, to make it really clear, if this is your problem and it occurs at this time, then this is who you call. And make it clear to people that we use contractors after hours because there are usually minimal problems. But if it's a serious one and you can't get a contractor, then call the police. I don't think we've got that message out there for all our, you know, all the masses of time that it's apparently spent on education. That message is not out there. People expect council inspectors to turn up at midnight, and I know that's unrealistic, but we have not done the communication job. So that's the view from the chair. Councillor Crossland, before we resume standing orders, you've got a comment? Just unmute. Unmute yourself, sorry.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, just a sort of a clarification that sort of come out of the debate. Obviously, after hours parking is a concern, and I know it's pretty minimal, but one of the ones that came up was the sporting at weekends. Most is on a Saturday, but I notice we've got contractors that are on a Sunday. And I just wondered how many parking complaints there were. Again, this is a problem when you don't have the detail in the report. Were coming on a Sunday for sporting parking issues?
I just wondered if staff can clarify. Can we get level of detail, Mr. Delacourt?
Thank you, Chair. I don't have that specific stat in front of me. I don't believe we have it broken down by source of complaint on a Sunday. I do remember the Sunday complaints being quite low. Perhaps if Mr. Manuel has any further light to shed on Sunday complaints, that might assist.
Through the chair, there weren't a great deal of parking complaints relating from memory relating to sporting events on Sundays. The main locations where we get sporting event complaints at Edwardstown Oval, and we had a little patch there up at the Hallett Cove Football Club. But that seemed to die down last winter, to be honest. Got hardly any complaints after the traffic management fixed up all the bollards along that curb. That stopped all the parking complaints there. In relation to sad days, our Westfield inspector will, if he gets a complaint, will go out to the Edwardstown Football Club and patrol those no stopping zones. But that's about all we get on weekends for football clubs.
So just a follow-up question from Mr. Manuel's point of view. If we had contractors available on Saturdays for parking, would that really improve the customer service that we offer, or is it going to make no difference really whatsoever?
Through the chair, in my view, I think it'll make very little difference. We just don't get enough complaints to justify the $150 call out. And I think you made the point perfectly. By the time the inspector gets there, unlikely the vehicle will even be there. Yeah, that's in my view.
All right. Before we resume standing orders, Councillor Valescu, you had a question?
Yeah, I've got a question. I rang about a dog at large and I was basically told that there was nothing that the contractors could do. They had the, someone had to capture the dog and then they could possibly come and pick it up. So that indicates to me there's a certain scope of things that they can do. So are we recording our stats from the limited scope of things that they can do, or are we doing for every call that we get? And are we sure that all the calls that we get where we reject people are being recorded, I mean, in stats?
Good question. Mr. Delacombs.
Thank you for the question. Through the chair, look, the stats that we get from our after-hours provider aren't the best, and I think we'll be seeking, as part of this new contract that we're negotiating anyway, as a result of the current contract with the current provider expiring soon, and this cross-collaboration deal that we might be pursuing, or at least entertaining through our other partner councils, we'll be looking for a bit of service improvement in the way we can deal with matters, and that will be reviewed.
Very well. Look, I know it's getting late, but I feel this is an important story to tell, because despite my efforts, I didn't get an answer from administration about what I thought was poor service. Where the lady from Cheltenham parks in Mitchell Park in a bike lane. She gets a ticket posted to her 2 weeks later. In the meantime, she's parked in the bike lane again and got an expiation notice affixed to the windscreen. When she gets that, she pays it. She thinks, okay, I didn't realise it was a bike lane, or maybe I did, but I took the chance, I'll pay it. But then she gets in the post the infringement notice for the first offending. And I suppose the unfair part of it was that if she'd been caught the first time and given the expiation notice, or even if she'd got it very quickly via post, she probably wouldn't have offended the second time. So she was hit twice. She offended both times, but she didn't, you know, the saying once bitten, twice shy. Well, if you don't know you were bitten the first time, you get bitten again. So terribly unfair, but under the legislation, there's no, you know, no excusing it. And when I asked about, you know, why would it take 2 weeks to post out an expiation notice instead of putting it on the windscreen? I didn't get a satisfactory answer. So I want to put that on the public record, unless staff have anything to add. We'll resume standing orders. We've got a motion before us. Is there a seconder to Councillor Crossland's motion? Not seeing any. Councillor Gard, thank you. Did you wish to speak to that? Anyone speaking against? Councillor Valescu.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I think we need to do more in after hours. I think we also need to have a broader scope of the sort of things that can be done after hours. I do understand that $150 is a lot of money for a call out. So I guess if the motion did encompass an expanded or an enhanced after hours offer, I would support it in its current form. But just to keep it as the current service level, especially for after hours, is not something that I can support. And also the issue that the mayor raised, obviously there are some deficiencies, and that's totally unfair for the resident not to be given that awareness that they had offended.
Anyone else speaking in favour of the motion? There being none, it goes back to Councillor Crossland to close the debate.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I'll speak briefly, mainly just to Councillor Valescu's point, as that was the only one raised. There are minimal parking offences. The only thing we can increase is to add parking to our contractors. Ultimately, we'll pay a lot of money to the contractors for no extra service. What I would say, though, is this motion does have a review point to come back to council, and has been raised a number of times. I think the detail that's lacking in a business case, realistically, for even a 0.5 increase, is not there. And my advice would be that when this comes back for a review, if we do need more or less staff, we really need those actual numbers of what the job was. Was it dealt with by the contractor? If it wasn't, why not? Would a change in the contract make a difference, and how much would that cost? But without that, we're really just shooting from the hip without really knowing the cost and the nature of the jobs these people are going to deal with. So I'm at this stage going to stick with the motion as printed and recommended to members. Thank you.
I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. This is getting very difficult. Believe me, it is difficult to see who's voting. Everyone lower their hands. All those in favour of the motion, can you please put your hand in front of the camera? Thank you. Lower your hands, please. All those against, please put your hand in front of the camera. Right. The motion is carried by a majority. Now, I'm aware
division,
that we've got...
Division, please, Mr. Mayor.
Division's called by Councillor Hull. Those in favour, please record your vote electronically. And so I've got Councillors Hutchinson, Pryor, Schilling, Telfer, Duncan, Masika, Gard and Crossland in favour. And now you could lower your hands, and all those against, please raise your hand electronically. And I've got Councillors Clancy, Hull, Mason and Velescu. So the motion is carried by majority. Just checking, Ms. McKenzie, you had the same numbers? 8-4. Thank you. Right. Now, I'm conscious that we've got a couple of weighty items that are confidential items. We've got some corporate reports which won't take long. So at this stage, I'm just letting members know, probably better to proceed as the agenda stands. The community event fund, rather than, because we don't get this report often, and there's a recommended $3,000 increase in the fund, let's take that separately. But otherwise, it does look as if the fund's working as it should. Would someone like to move something in relation to the Community Event Fund Annual Report, page 261? Councillor Masika.
Yeah, thank you, Your Worship. I'd like to move the recommendation it is written, and I want the council to note that it is always good to make these funds available for the community to be able to stage the community, which can increase the participation in the society. It's the right direction. So I would like to move up the motion.
Thank you. Is that seconded, Councillor Hull?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Look, I think with something like this, you've got to find the sweet spot. If you don't give it enough resources, we're asking staff to try and create credible events with not enough resources, and it doesn't cut it. Obviously, you can actually go overboard. Some councils have been criticised in Adelaide for excessive amounts of expenditure, but I think this is the sweet spot. And look, Marion Council has had some very good events. The one at Warrapringa Under the Stars, was particularly good. We've been unlucky with events down at Hallett Cove, but that was more weather related. If we're going to do a community events, let's provide the staff with enough resources to at least make a fist of it, to try and do something credible that's not even on the verge of embarrassing. And I've seen this before, not so much lately, Mr. Mayor, but I over my council careers, it's sometimes been a bit cringeworthy how we've approached some of these community events because we haven't provided resources, no criticism of the staff. And I think that increasing this helps provide enough money to find that sweet spot where we can conduct these events and and do it well and do it frugally.
And just clarifying, thank you for that, Councillor Hull. These are community-initiated, community-run events where we are contributing to help make it a success. Anyone speaking against? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Yeah, carried unanimously. Thank you. So now the next two corporate reports, work health and safety and finance, I think we can move on block. Councillor Pryor?
Absolutely. Move seconded on block. Councillor
seconded Councillor Telfer. But I will take any questions on either report. Councillor Blescu.
Yeah, look, I'm just wondering what we're expecting as far as work health and safety, especially days lost, things like that, in respect to the COVID-19. Have we looked at that? Has there been any sort of analysis or planning? Are there things that possibly we could expect from it?
Okay, virus impact, Mr. Skull?
Thank you, Worship. It's a great question. We're collecting data, and at the moment we haven't got sufficient to report. There are a number of staff who have taken leave unexpectedly, and it's it could be COVID related. It's quite hard to actually ascertain whether people are away because of COVID, but it'd be interesting to see the stats when they come through, which will be probably the end of June, I would think. But yeah, certainly I can vouch for the fact that COVID has had a significant impact on a number of staff in many ways, as much emotionally as much as anything else. That doesn't really answer your question, Councillor Velez-Cooper, so the answer is we haven't got the stats yet, but we're getting
it. Presumably, Mr. Skull, you would know, and possibly you would tell us without identifying anyone, if a staff member was infected?
Oh, absolutely. And that hasn't happened. We haven't had a, touch wood, we haven't had a staff member infected. We've had friends and family definitely have, but not infected.
Let's see, thank you. Councillor Hull had a question.
My question, Mr. Mayor, relates to the finance report. It's a very broad question without focusing on anything much particular, but with our works program, I still question that there's some lines that have got very unlikely to enough time to be completed. And that is because of the broader question I have. The timing is, if you look, on many of these pages, there's a big spike at the end. There's a big rush to spend money and carry out works in the month of, well, in the middle of winter. What is it? The month of July, June, is it? Yeah. Next month. With street trees and streetscaping, I can understand it because that's the time to plant in the wetter months. I get that completely. But if you're trying to do anything else, really, footpaths and drainage and whatever else, why would you be factoring in the big spend and the big rush at the end when there's every chance that weather will either interrupt or prevent that happening? So I'd really like to know why we schedule in this fashion when we're setting ourselves up to fail.
Right. Who would like to answer that one? Mr. Lyons or Mr. Barnwell? Ms. Dinmore? Mr. Lyons? No? Mr. Barnwell?
I can start. It's a pertinent question from Councillor Hull. You've probably noticed that all of the profiles for the annual spend are a little bit different. Some are pretty streamlined as far as a monthly. Some are weighted to the front end, some are weighted to the back end. As you know, we have a monthly meeting on Capital Works that all of the executives, so that's the four ELT that are on your screen, all attend and scrutinise and manage this. And at the bottom of each of the charts, you'll see in size 3 font, I think we've managed to do it, that we're generally on track for either completion or close completion. I know that Councillor Hull has hit a nail on the head there, and I've already had a discussion with our new operations manager, Fiona Harvey, about how we can bring forward some of these programs next year and weight them earlier in the year rather than worrying about cramming it in the last few months and also in inclement weather. But the picture's also not quite as bad as it looks. As you know, we're sort of waiting to get invoices. The work has to be done and then it gets invoiced. And it's only when it gets paid that Ray puts it on the sheet. So there's a bit of a lag there. And of course, some of the bigger projects do take quite a bit of time to get some expenditure happening. And then it does happen at very, very quickly in the last few months. So maybe if I could just say two things, Councillor Hull. I have had a discussion this week with Ms. Harvey about that. And secondly, we are on track to give you some good data for the annual spend in a few months' time.
Thank you.
Anything to add from any other manager?
No? If I can, if your worship, it's controversial, but for Mr. Barmore and I, it's the bane of our existence. And we need to get far better planned. One of the troubles that we've got is that carryovers impact the timing of works in the early part of the financial year every year. Fortunately, our carryovers are lessened slightly this year into next year, but we certainly need the things to be better timed because it works against us, not just as Councillor Hull says with weather, but also with costing for outsourced works. Every council does it, and the contractors actually do very well out of works that are put back until the back end of the year. So it is a frustration that we're working towards getting better.
All right. Any other questions? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour for those two on block. That's carried unanimously. And now we're due to, so I bring the webinar to a close as far as the open and public items are concerned, except for a motion to go into confidence.
Excuse me, Your Worship, do we need to move a procedural motion to extend time?
I was just going to ask about people's intention. So if you'd like to move that way.
I'm happy to move that. I think this confidential item needs to be dealt with and put to bed as soon as possible.
Everyone knows how much I loathe going over 9:30, but it is a critical issue. So seconded Councillor Pryor.
I agree.
If no one's speaking against, all those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. So there on page 302, there's a cover sheet to go into confidence, and everyone knows what the matter's about, and that it warrants confidence, I think. So would someone like to move that we go into confidence? Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Valescu. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried by a majority. So there is a procedural consequence of that we will finish the webinar. Thank you to all of those who are attending and watching the live stream. We now deal with confidential matters, and in about 1 minute, we'll resume in a separate confidential meeting. So you'll need to log in again. Thanks very much, everyone.